not fully committed? You're turning and facing this way?
Yes.
No. It's like you got halfway there and stalled. It happens. All right. So, would you find somebody you do not know and have not spoken with and partner with them, please? There's some people available in the back of the room, too, that you might...
I don't know if I need... I think I'm sitting out because I'm an odd person.
You're the odd person? Okay.
The odd as well.
You don't know each other. Is that all right? Are you? Yeah, I think you are. All right, good. Okay, so if you would... I must be hearing things. If you would consider for a moment... Not everybody in this room is on the retreat, so we'll go larger, more global than our own little experience. But a favorite insight, something that you've seen recently, either on the retreat, those of you who are on the retreat, okay? And for everybody else, just something that you've seen recently that is helpful or big or important or significant or in some way worth mentioning, insight, awareness. Okay? So consider that for just a moment. And as you're considering it, decide who's going to go first and who's going to go second. So, what did you see? Jen?
So I was looking at, I was telling my partner that I saw one of those things that, wow, and I'm recording about it, and I realized, oh, right, that's what we say, that's what we're talking about. But it's that, it feels like an experience of what I think is talked about in practice is the negative way, and the wisdom of that, because what I was looking at is that...
signal if you can't hear back there, okay? I know you're a long ways away.
Sitting meditation. And that my experience is that rededication, that, you know, to come back here, when it comes in the form of, always, it comes from a very sincere desire to be here and from a very deep experience of that's what I want. That's where life works, that's what's best for all of those things. And how easily that can become And what I've been watching that's been so interesting is that sort of another approach is I'm sitting and I'm breathing and I'm counting and I'm noticing and a process starts, like planning. And so then there's And then there's wool gathering. I love that term that you use. That's the one that's like, it's not planning, it's not organizing, it's not worrying, it's just, what? Really? That? You know, just some random something about something. So that comes through, not that. And it's such an interesting experience that it feels like there's way less of an opening for an identity to come in with that approach than there is from the I'm gonna. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
So when you are in that place and something comes in, whatever it is, whether it's something that you recognize as a kind of karmic tendency or it's just Buicks and
Exactly. I said some of them out loud on my recorder recently, and it was the funniest thing because, I mean, I know, I'm aware of what that is, but saying it out loud, oh my gosh, did it highlight the absurdity. Mm-hmm. of the, you know, so if with my family we did go to the, now where would they sleep if they went to the, I mean, what?
Yeah. Just these bizarre. Ego is really grasping.
Reaching, yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's there. So on the one hand, you have this what you know to be very sincere desire to practice.
Yeah.
And then there you are, sitting there in random land.
Yeah.
And the danger that we run into is that person who is, I'm going to, maybe just kind of sliding over into a little judgment about, or law, it sounds like, a lot of judgment about how you're doing that. So somehow the fact that that wool gathering is happening says that you're not sincere, makes you the wrong person, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so with that attitude of, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And where was I? Oh, right.
One.
Uh-huh. And there's sort of nothing for anybody to grab onto.
Yeah.
There really isn't a problem.
Yeah.
Because as you described it, all you're doing is practicing.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
That's the beauty of 1 to 10.
Yeah.
It could be a clue for us that we're actually not getting anywhere. And in fact, that's all that's going on. It helps me know when I'm wondering where my family members slept on that vacation when I was 6 and we were in, and you go, okay, not present. That's right. All right. 1.
Yeah.
And there doesn't need to be anything at all about that.
Yeah.
It's just a help in our practice of presence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. As you describe it, it's really the, I think what we talk about when we say getting out of the relationship.
Yes.
With the.
Yes.
Because it's all a relationship.
Yes.
That's the.
Yes. Because it's you,
right,
and it's something about you, and this is information about you.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I'm going to ask you people what you want to talk about before it's over. There's something I want to talk about, so don't let me forget, okay?
Okay.
All right. So, so there's a voice talking about you. There's just few things as compelling for ego as me.
Right. And that ultimate bamboozle that me is me.
Yes. Rather than, as we get to all the time, but it's still one of those, when you see it, ooh, it's big. That really what you experience as you is observing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to see, especially when we're in that.
Yeah.
The voice is me talking to me about me. It's just me everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then that growing sense that if that's all that's going on, how do I know all of that?
Mm-hmm.
How is it possible for me to be cognizant of all of that if I really am that person in that ventriloquist conversation where I call me I and you.
Yeah. 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 Oh, that's such a good point.
Yeah. And so catching on to that, having that felt sense of, and then from there, it's possible for us to just watch that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yes, it's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, 1. You see it, and there's the three. Mm-hmm. Pretty soon, you're watching what tries to come in and pull you away instead of coming back from somewhere, instead of
exactly.
being out there in that conversation.
Yeah.
And you can see the whole pull. See the whole pull. And you're just practicing, staying here, letting awareness expand, sensing all of it. Oops. I think I've been gone a really long time. Okay. One. And if we really do, it's what you started off with. If we realize that what we are doing in this is expressing the sincere desire to reunite, to unite with that which animates us. It so takes it out of ego's domain. That's all I'm doing. I'm sitting here, and it's one of those, you know, if all the lights suddenly come on and you know, and there it is, and you're rivaling, you arm wrestle the Buddha. You are so enlightened. First of all, that should catch your attention. Get a little nervous there. But, you know, it'd be fun. Right? That would absolutely be a great time, we guess.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're just practicing being here in gratitude for all that this is.
Yeah.
See? So if we, you know, if we want a little variety, we can say, one, thank you. Help us remember why we're here and what we're doing.
Yeah. So good. Okay.
Christian.
So I was talking about the working meditations and how I've been normally in my life, I'm so focused just on getting it done that I don't really pay attention to the process. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days ago when I was out there digging holes with this big machine, I had to be very focused. And at one point, you came up and said, okay, you guys have to stop because you have to go to lunch. And I looked around and everyone was gone and I didn't notice. So then I got confused because I was like, wow, I was really in the zone there. I was really focused. But was I aware? I felt like I was very aware of what I was doing because I was so focused. But if I was aware, wouldn't I have noticed that everyone left? And I don't know the answer.
It's funny, I was just reading something on this very subject where apparently the fellow, well, his name's Rinzai, so he started Rinzai Zen. Okay. It's just like now, you know, Graves' disease. So we know. Mr. Graves discovered it, right? Anyway, so he was talking about it in four stages, and the first one that you mention is the first one he mentions, and he calls it, you know, he's writing this many centuries ago. I'm sure he would have said human instead of man, because certainly I'm sure women practicing then, but they didn't have the same sensitivity that we have now. So we'll help him out, okay? And so there's circumstances, we'll say present. Circumstances present, human not. Okay? So you're completely aware, just lost in what you're doing. The attention is so on what you're doing that you have no sense of anything other than what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Okay. The next one that he lays out, and I can't remember three or four. If we were going to be, you know, if the retreat were longer, I would look it up again and tell you what three and four is. I think I suspect, but I don't know the order. But the next one, of course, is human present, circumstances not. Mm-hmm. And we all know that, right? We're just so focused on what's going on with us that we have no idea if there's a reality around us, right? Or even what we're doing. I mean, people God. The one, I don't know how many of you read about this, but the person was walking down the street on the phone and fell into the open thing and died. So circumstances gone, right? All the focus is on what the person is doing. And then the other, where both are here, so aware of circumstances, aware of person, so an expanded awareness. And then, of course, there's the ever popular, I don't know what's out there. I don't know what's in here. I have no idea. And then we come to after a certain point. Anyway, so yes, a fun place to look, not in terms of a right answer, but just to notice those different states. And of course, one of the things that I think is particularly fun, I don't know if it's particularly helpful, but is that process of expanding the awareness. So, you know, when you're wrestling a machine that seems bent on throwing you a few feet in the air, it would take a certain level of disidentification to want to use that moment as an opportunity, but one could, right? So then there's the awareness of the machine and awareness of the body and how the body is and what the machine is doing and then what's around. So instead of the experience being so let me digress for just a moment. There's a book that I get on Jags, let's face it, and talk about periodically, by a fellow named Douglas Harding. It's called mm-hmm. On Having No Head. Mm-hmm. Okay? And his awakening moment was when he suddenly realized that he didn't have a head. Now, everybody else, and if you stop for just a second, you'll realize what Douglas noticed, okay? You have no head. Now, we assume that we have one because everyone else has one, right? But your experience is you don't. So there's this stalk, right, that comes up, and then the entire universe is on that stalk. And so, you know, we've been talking a lot about no boundaries or the boundaryless universe and that sort of thing. So here comes the stalk, and then on that is the entire universe, and the stalk is in the entire universe. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of a whole package. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And so with that, there you are. And then there's the moving back, the moving back, the moving back. And then you can see that guy. Right? And there he is, wrestling the machine. And Phil and I were talking about this today, too. So that moving back into that more expanded awareness. Now from that place, then you would have noticed that other people left, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of thing can be fun to do, you know, in less challenging circumstances.
It silenced the voices, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or, if all else fails, at least you'll be very aware of them in a context. Mm-hmm. Because when we're trapped inside this little imaginary thing here that we assume is on the top of our necks, the voices seem very dominant. Right? And amazingly, I don't know how many of you can remember, but there was a time when we didn't know that. Yeah. Right? If somebody had said the voice is in your head, you'd go, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because I don't have voices in my head. I mean, I think, but and how much of the time do we spend noticing that we think? Not much, right? So there's that. And then we become aware, but we start paying attention, we become aware of that, all that's going on in there. And that, for a while, can seem like your whole world. Because it's so loud and you can't get away from it, and you notice that it's mean and controlling and all of these other kinds of things. And so it seems like, well, that it's just too much. I mean, and I've got to get rid of it, and there's nothing I can do about it. But when you see it in that larger context, then you realize it's actually a very small part of what we might call infinity. And not at all personal, right? So, just being able to sense how human beings are, and that's one of the ways that human beings are. The next time you're wrestling a giant machine. Yeah, it's quiet.
I just recently had some time to sit among those giant redwoods.
Uh-huh.
And I found out they have no head.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's pretty interesting. They're all stalk and no head. At the top is dead.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a place where critters come and rest.
Birds land
and insects make their homes and da-da-da-da-da. But they don't have a head. Hmm. And the tree was suggesting that I might do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Sands
the insects and birds and
exactly,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Just let them rest here and don't be using it all the time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, to let it die.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty interesting conversation.
Yeah. Let's just move into quiet.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, this morning I had a really wonderful experience of gratitude and just presence and feeling just deep gratitude and just so happy to be alive, and it was just beautiful. And what I saw about that was that I tend to have those experiences and I think, well, that's just a blip in the, you know, in the real world of conditioned mind. And this morning I saw, oh, that's what's real, and it's actually possible to be there and have that other thing be the blip. And it was a shift.
yes indeed.
It was a big shift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And that's very much what I was attempting to point at with that stepped back perspective, mm-hmm. to see how really small that little ego conversation is in the vastness of all that is.
Yeah, and I just saw how long I've been bamboozled into thinking that that's, you know, and to strive like, oh, I have to do something to fix myself to be in this other place that's just so pleasurable.
And in fact, all you needed to do was walk out on your deck
exactly.
at sunrise and relax.
And relax. Exactly. And there was nothing I did mm-hmm. to make that happen. It was just what was there. So so I guess what the tree told me the other day about just letting this go. Mm-hmm. It's Yeah,
that's great. Yeah. It all comes together.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sarah.
I really enjoyed the working meditation. I feel like in that experience, a lot of the things I'm working with are telling me, you know, they're almost speaking to me and telling me something. And but the most memorable was in the garden, where the assignment was to aerate the beds, and there were a lot of leaves covering over it, and my assumption was that we had to get rid of the leaves. And that, you know, but the assignment was to move them aside, aerate the beds, and put them back. And it took me back to the first night here, you know, that to see those leaves as having, even when they had fallen off the tree, and I looked at them and said, saw death, you know, mm-hmm. they still had a place and a role. Mm-hmm. And
a hugely important role.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and I think I've seen it in other, you know, in other assignments. There's this tendency to look for the the thing that's wrong or damaged, I could see it in the kale, you know, and to draw conclusions about it and think that there are things that have to be segregated away instead of being welcomed as, or just, I don't know, it's just,
Yeah, well, we are so conditioned to separation. Mm-hmm. Everything is on one side of a duality or the other. That's just what conditioned mind does. Mm-hmm. And so to see wholeness in anything is truly a challenge. To see a continuum rather than a duality is something we really have to train ourselves to be able to do. And as we're training ourselves to do that, we see how deep and powerful the conditioning is, mm-hmm, away from that, and how quickly conditioned mind is just, as you say, it sees through that separation. This is the good. This isn't. This is, mm-hmm, this is the right way. This is how it should be. This shouldn't be this way. This is, you need to feel this way. You shouldn't feel that way. That's a good way to be. That's not a good way to be. Constant. You've all noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I say one other thing? Yeah. I also walked down to the creek, and I'd never been there before. I didn't realize going down there quite how far it was, but I didn't want to stop, and so kept going. And I realized how many times, like in my life, when you don't know where you're headed, it seems much farther than it is going back.
Yes.
And I thought,
although that's downhill.
and then as I went down, I kept thinking I would have to go back up here. But the walk up was more pleasurable than the walk down, because I was more present going up than I was down. Mm-hmm. And I it just reminded me of what you and I had been speaking about earlier, that I think, you know, I'm not, I it seems like such a long way away to be able to be free of conditioned mind, you know? But I think that path, in a way, was showing me, in a way, if that's your perception of it.
That's right.
But
that, in fact, that's conditioned mind's perception. Oh, no. It's going to take a long time.
And you're going to have to walk back up.
Very hard. You should probably quit now.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So, was that, did I? No? Oh, yeah, oh.
Okay.
Were you just
no,
saying amen, sister? No.
No, I thought you were going to ask anything else that you seem to be trying
moving
to
along. No, yeah, okay. I've got my program, but I'm on track.
Okay, so I should.
Yes, please.
Okay. So, a couple things. One is that I'm sitting here and realizing that all the insights I talked about my dyad, that there are other insights I already had that, you know, they're just like dropping in as I'm sitting here. And the one that I thought was important to share about is that since the last retreat, I've been, you know, pondering this idea of life supporting me, right? I'm supported by life. Mm-hmm. And what my conditioning had said is, yeah, I've hardly done any work on that. You know, you haven't done anything. You know, like, what are you doing? And then I don't know. It dawned on me. It's like, no, it is working, because it's like a lot of, at least for me in this stage of my practice, I can't draw lines between things. It's like I do these things and it doesn't seem like anything's happening, and then, oh, it happened. It just happens on its own. And one of the things is that I've just noticed in this retreat, things that happened that I was just like, didn't like. I'd be like, oh, whatever, you know, I don't like this thing, but, you know, its ego doesn't like it, and it'll be gone anyway. Like, it's not even worth worrying about. And last night I happened to be miserable, physically miserable, and I was so happy that there wasn't going to be an evening thing. And then it was announced at dinner that we're having yoga, and I was like, no, and then we came to yoga and it was completely fine. It was, you know, it was deep relaxation. I was so concerned about I had all this congestion and everything. I was so concerned about whipping my head around, but I was, but we didn't do any of that. And it's like, so here it is again. Life just like supports you. There's all kinds of gifts that keep dropping in all the time. And when something happens that I don't, that, you know, for whatever reason, my perception is I don't like it, that's okay too, because it's going to go away. And maybe later on, I might realize I did like it, that it was really helpful to me.
Yes, well, and the way you phrased it that's most helpful, the ego doesn't like it.
Yes.
And
yes.
So that's great. I it's good to recognize all the things ego doesn't like. And I don't need to take any of that personally. Mm-hmm. I can realize all the things ego likes too and be really leery of those.
So. Well, it's interesting to say that because if I'm to be honest, I do identify with ego as if it's me. You know, I don't always make that separation.
Yes.
Except that for some reason it doesn't have the holding power on me that it used to have. That's the thing that's sort of fascinating to me.
Yes.
Like, so I identify with ego, I don't like this, I don't want this, and then the next thought is, oh, whatever. It's not worth worrying about.
Yes.
So
you're not taking it seriously in the same way, are you?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I'm not taking it seriously. And I don't know how I got there. It just, you know, I just do what I do. I do my practice, I do my best. And now it's just happening.
That's right. That's exactly it. So what we talk about on occasion is back to meditation and sitting in meditation. And so we'll say, or sitting in group. You know, sometimes people will take notes in group, and I'll say, no, don't do that. You don't want to do that. Because that's taking something that cannot be understood by conditioned mind and trying to put it in conditioned mind language so that conditioned mind can ignore it later. So, no, if we just put ourselves in the conversation, it'll happen. We will be transformed. Same with sitting meditation. What we were talking about earlier. You know, we just sit there and we do our best to show up in gratitude with all the sincerity we can muster, and that's it. And if we do that, we will be transformed. There's just no doubt about it. It's just how it is, and that's what you're noticing. All you're doing is practicing, and these changes are happening. You're not trying to make those changes happen. You're not even actively working on those particular things, and yet you're changing. It's happening.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also how conditioning wants to have a beginning and an end, and, you know, we're going somewhere, and that's not how it's happening at all.
Not at all. Not at all. Because conditioned mind buys into all of these things, like past, present, future, here and there, now and then. All of these ideas that we have about how things work, but that's not how it works. That's not how life is at all. So drawing lines from things and trying to make them fit into, I mean, if we are really devoted to ignoring, then it can seem like those things are true. There's a past, there's a present, and there's a future. If you really believe that, then it will seem to you like that is true. But that doesn't make it true.
Yeah, one time I was talking with a friend who I respect a lot, and she's a scientist, and so I sort of let it slip, like, something along these, of course I didn't say this eloquently, and she was very quick to be like, well, you know, we can predict certain things and we can do all this, and the thought I had is, all that stuff is just so minor, it doesn't even matter, really. I mean, it's nice, science has gotten us a lot of nice things. It's nothing, I'm a firm believer in science, I'm not a science denier, but, just want to make that clear.
Well, we start blaming you for things.
You know, but it really, I guess my thought nowadays is like, but it's all, in a lot of ways, it's like all the minor stuff. You know, it's not the stuff that really matters.
Well, and, you know, it's that place that probably, again, we've all gotten to, where, you know, I've just got every muscle in a knot trying to control things. And it's going really well. I mean, clearly it's working. And then it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I have nowhere to go with it. Mm-hmm. Because I was doing everything right. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work. So what do we get? Well, it's because you this and you that. And so I open myself up to a big load of self-hate and I take all the blame for it. And then I tense up a little bit more. Yeah. Because I'm convinced that if I, then I can make it. And so, yeah. Are we controlling anything? I don't think so. It's just that most of life goes basically in a direction that we can follow. Mm. But that's not the same as we're in control, or we know what's going to happen, or we can... We can't. So...
Yeah. But at least personally for me, that exact experience of trying to control it and everything's going well and then just, and then life goes like this.
Yeah.
And that's what, that's what brought me here.
Yes. Yeah. Anybody else have an experience like that? Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a very valuable experience.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be lovely if everybody knew by age 14 that there's no such thing as control. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to make anything happen. Mm-hmm. So now, how are you going to arrange your life? But it takes most of us a little longer than that to get to that awareness. And to stop blaming ourselves. To stop being willing to have the voices blame us. Stop believing in the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, so... I talked with a number of people over the last little while who talked with me about shame. I will not mention names. No, I'm just kidding. That's a little shame humor. So...
Wow.
So, here's the thing, that I, so, you know, 2013, we stopped feeling bad, right? As a Sangha, we agreed in 2013 to stop feeling bad. And to a large degree, I think a lot of people have had great success with that. Now, we had to quickly follow that with, okay, not feeling bad, part of that is... Without a change in behavior, there cannot be a change in consciousness. Okay? So it doesn't mean you just do whatever and don't feel bad. That is not where we're going. That's a different program. It is doing the very best that we can, and whatever happens, we see it as an opportunity to seek. Not something to feel bad about, because feeling bad is just a waste of time and a lost opportunity to be aware, to see, to learn, to grow. Okay. Nick's shame. Okay. Can we all be in agreement about that, please? It is, you know. The other one that I would put with it, of course, is guilt, which I have long, it's just tops of my list of the most useless waste of time that anybody could ever want to indulge. And guilt is the most useless waste of human energy. Okay? Can everybody see that? It's just useless. It's useless. I mean, it doesn't do anything. There is no, it has no redeeming feature. None. Okay? So, it's just indulgence to feel guilty. It's over. It's finished. You can't do a thing about it. There. Did you learn from it? Everybody who ever feels guilty, when I say to them, did you learn anything? Oh, God, yes. Are you different now after that? Yeah. Okay. Let's get current then. You don't need to drag it around. So the Buddhist thing about, you know, there's a raft to get you to the other shore. When you get to the other shore, put the raft down. You know, don't set off across dry land. Okay? You don't need it any longer. If you learn something, and even if you didn't learn something, feeling guilty is not going to help you learn it. Just let it go and know you'll get another opportunity. We can look forward to that, okay? Shame is right in that same category. It is useless. It is nothing other than ego having something that it's got going that it can use against a person to ruin their good time. That's it. Now, I could be wrong. So if anybody wants to make a case for shame, I'm happy to just blow it out of the water right here. But you can go ahead and try. Beth.
No, I'm not going to make a case for it at all. But okay. I just want to check in on something. Uh-huh. So Brené Brown did a lot of work around shame and tried to really show people the uselessness, you know, because shame actually quells creativity.
Well, shame quells everything.
Well, yeah. She made a big distinction between guilt and shame, guilt being attributed to an action and shame being, how I'll put it, what I think our language, what practice language is the self-hate around that takes guilt and makes it into a self-hating piece. Makes it into a self-hating story. Uh-huh. Like shame just makes it about the person rather than just simply the action.
So is this like diagramming sentences so that by the time we figure out all the parts of speech we're going to know something?
My curiosity. I'm on board with dropping both. I totally get that. Is it the idea of, would responsibility be here, or is it really literally just, I learned a lesson and move on?
Well, if you learn something, you're going to be different.
Okay.
But even being responsible from a place of should, from a conditioned mind place, that's just ego suffering. So anything that like that happens in a conversation in conditioned mind is designed purely and simply to take us out of the present. And it also, I think, perpetuates an assumption that we have control that we do not have. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, what's dropping in is like, wow, it'd be really helpful to have an example. For instance, you know, I lied to a friend about where I went some night and she found out. Or something.
What
like
did
that.
You learn about that?
That it's hurtful. Mm-hmm. To the person mm-hmm. who I lied to, it's actually really, really hurtful to me. Mm-hmm. Is that a place of...
Well, let's just stop there.
Yeah.
That's helpful information, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the next time you think it drops in conditioned mind, don't tell. She'll never find out. There will be that little moment of clarity, we hope, you know, once we reach a certain level of conscious awareness that says, you know, I did that once, and it went really badly. Which is very different from, you shouldn't lie to your friends. Mm-hmm. So did you all, when we were growing up, you know, you shouldn't lie. Okay, why? It seems helpful. greasing your way through social interaction. And then we have our own experience of it.
Right?
So that I lied and my friend found out, but how about my friend lied and I found out? Okay? Because those are both really important experiences to have, right?
Yeah.
And especially, I'm on the receiving end of it, I really learned something much different from...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can I just pursue it one step further?
Absolutely.
So the friend finds out about it, confronts me, you lied to me, I can't believe you did that. Is that a place of...
Is that the place where you lied?
Lie again? No, but I guess that's where I'm sort of like curious, is the place of owning up to the inelegant behavior, to the lie. You know what, I did, I apologize. Not to have guilt and shame follow me after that action, but is there a place of interaction that I would...
See, these are hypothetical questions. I can give you a lot of hypothetical answers, but it probably wouldn't be that helpful. So, you know, I don't particularly believe in apologies. So, it ranks up there with forgiveness to me, which is another one that I think is highly overrated and apt to produce more karma than it undoes. So I lied to you, and you caught me, and I say, I'm sorry, Beth. I don't know what got into me. And you're programmed to say, well, it's okay. You know, it happens. Good deal, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but if I don't say I'm sorry, and I'm left with the enormity of what I've done, okay, I didn't get let off the hook. Then I get to experience the disappointment, the sadness, what it does to my heart when I do things that are from an unconscious place and that they are hurtful to other people and to me. And from that place, I probably tend to have a deeper experience, and one that's very likely to cause me to pay closer attention in the future than, oh yeah, sorry.
So helpful. Like, so helpful. That was it.
Excellent.
And I'm totally on board with forgiveness.
You want to be careful in these places, because if you know, you're in that situation and you say something like, but I'm not going to say I'm sorry.
That's the duality, right?
Yeah.
It's the, oh, I'm so sorry, and expecting instant forgiveness to the, screw you, no, I'm not saying I'm sorry.
Yeah. And instead, it's practicing sitting still with the learning experience that we have available to us in that moment.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else about,
So what would be helpful, just because I have so much, you know, or a lot of us maybe have so much karmic, you know, generations or maybe thousands of years or who knows what of this like intense shame conditioning. If you could go on like a full blown tirade, like you did this about like 6 months ago about guilt, and it like really, like it kind of like it actually got in there and shifted stuff up in my brain. So in my awareness, when you got really emotional about how breathless guilt was, I mean, it kind of like helped like offset all the like condition, just the sheer force of conditioning.
So you think we should do that about shame? I have to tell you, it's a hard one for me, because it is, believe it or not, it is not an experience that I have. And so it's, And maybe that's why I feel so strongly that people shouldn't do it. Because I see all this suffering that people have about this. And, I mean, what is it, really? You feel bad about who you are. You feel bad about something you've done. And it's very personal. It makes you a bad person that you did that, that you felt that or thought that. I can't see the point.
I know. I'm trying.
Get angry at shame here. Get angry at shame.
Yeah. Maybe if other people wanted to talk about it a little bit, we could get some energy worked up here. Rebecca has something. Sounds like Rob has something.
I don't know. I know shame really well, too, and guilt. They're like cousins, right? But and here's the thing that as you were saying that. So when I'm in shame, it feels like I'm embedded in concrete. And so to hear someone say, well, don't indulge shame, it's like, how do you do that? Because, you know, when you're in it.
Well, yes. That's a very good point. We can get back to that.
Okay, because I was going to go with what you were just talking about with Christian, right? About that. So we have the tools to know what to do when we are encased in a shame concrete bed that is trying to drag us down to the pits of despair, right? And it is that...
Dad, Sukes. I really do need to end this.
You are so lucky if you've never had this experience. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Oh, I get that. I mean, I listen to people talk about it. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to stop you, but on this side of it, you know, I'm thinking, what? I mean, what? How could you I think you're a bad person because you...
Oh, I've had that experience listening on the recorder sometimes. I'm like, for one thing, it's like, oh my God, talk about thinking you're the center of the whole freaking universe, right? When you're ensconced, whatever that word is, in shame. It really, truly is what we say, talk about, I'm the center of the universe. So ego is the center of the world because I'm so bad. I'm going to play with, you know, there's just all this weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth and all of that. And so, I don't know where I was going with that.
Oh, well, what you said was that when you're in that, to have an idea of not indulging that, it sounds like it just rolls off the concrete.
yes, exactly. But we have the tools. That was it. Uh-huh. And it was what you were just talking about. Because, you know, for one thing, recording and listening. Because when I can hear myself, when I've recorded, when I'm in the shame and guilt, it engenders so much compassion and clarity about what we're ending here. Mm-hmm. Not what this person was suffering about or any of that, but what we're doing here in practice. So that's the first tool that I think is just our saving grace. But it's also that expanding awareness in the moment. I have had a few experiences where I'm so deep in it that I know this isn't real. Uh-huh. And it's that expand. I mean, it feels real with every fiber of my being, and there's such a compelling thing to go with it because of all the conditioning. But experience and practice or whatever, thank God, allows just enough light to come in, just enough expansive awareness to know that there's another way. And I don't know, maybe that's what enabled me to pick up the recorder. I don't know.
And so what you're saying, if I'm with you, is that there's the individual piece of it. There's the whatever is going on with you. And you can see that that's a center of the universe place. And what you're able to see in that expanded awareness is those types of processes. are what we are dealing with in practice.
Exactly.
Right, and that, and I think that that's why I'm so passionate about, especially with those two, guilt and shame, just ditching it, because there's nothing that, with it. You know, I mean, if you're really angry, you have a lot of, you know, you got a lot of energy going there. You could go in a lot of directions with that. Or if you're really sad, you know, but guilt and shame are just such a story.
Yeah.
And so it's seeing how those kinds of experiences pull people down into suffering unnecessarily. So down here, you know, I feel shame that, I don't know, what would I feel shame about? Embezzling all that money? Would that do it? Did I say that? and so there I am, or, you know, I drank that third martini, or ate a pound of chocolate, or whatever it is that I did. And so it's all about me and feeling awful about that. I'm an awful person because I did that. I did that. And so there's no larger awareness when I'm so stuck in that. Mm-hmm. I can't see that the whole thing is just a scam to keep me in that place.
Yeah.
And so if it weren't this, then it would be something else that would be hovering over, keeping me focused on that little ego place, stuck in isolation.
Yeah.
Is that what you're pointing at?
Yes, that is it. And so when I'm hearing, well, we'll take the pound of chocolate, and God, I'm such a pig. Oh my God, I can't believe, you know, when I'm hearing that, and it's just like the vice is on, to have a sense, you know, for one thing, all of the work we've done around self-hate, we know the voices of self-hate, we've got, you know, all the work we've done, we can sense that, and that's what will help the image I'm getting is the awareness expands and it lifts the oppressor off the poor squashed human being who's actually the recipient of it, and that's how we can ditch shame. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, I don't, you know, you don't feel shame, you know, that it doesn't work, but to employ the tools.
Well, yes, because, and of course, the bottom line answer to this is redirect your attention, as it is with everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because shame is a story,
yeah.
Right? And I would bet it's like a lot of people get with any strong emotion, right? So it hits because there's a karmic conditioning to it, and it hits, but then it goes away, mm-hmm. Right? So you have to hear the story again, right? Oh, I can't, and there it was, and then I ate the whole almond, and then maybe I have to compare it to other times when I ate all the other disgusting things and how it means that, and we just extrapolate, you know, because everybody knows, and they all think that, and it's disgusting and hopeless, and isn't that true? I mean, you have to keep hearing it, or it passes away. So if we redirect the attention away from that story, then it's got nothing. Well, I just looked at the clock, so. I'm not ashamed to say. So thank you very much. I hope we continue with this, and I hope you'll give me progress reports on no guilt, no shame. We just don't do that. Go, you know, do some of the other strong feelings or emotions or whatever it is, but not those two, please. Ditch them.
Rumor has it that our retreat for the next year is on strong emotions.
I've heard that rumor, yeah, so I'm trying to get Elizabeth by April, okay? I should have it, okay? I'm going to try to do a lot of things between now and then.
December.
That would cause me to be deeply ashamed. Oh, that's right, December, New Year's. Oh, boy, I better hop on it. Yeah, New Year's retreat.
That's great. Yeah. You're even the monotone just doesn't cut it, you know?
Yeah. Don't feel shame. There's really no reason to feel shame. Or anger or a deep sadness.
That's what all the other Zen teachers sound like.
They do?
Even worse.
Wow.
Boring.
Not to speak ill of this religion. We'll try to go with that, okay? All right. And do we need an announcement about the schedule? There is a schedule.
I just posted.
You posted the schedule? Okay. All right, good. Sleep well.